full data and dashboards? Think again. In today's episode, we bust the myth that analytics is impersonal and show how you can uncover the heartbeat of an organization. Dr. Fiona Jamieson shares powerful stories from retail, manufacturing, and logistics, where data didn't just drive decisions, it sparked connection, compassion, and real change. You'll hear how frontline workers felt seen, how turnover dropped when care showed up in the numbers, and how even long-haul drivers, maybe, became part of culture of trust. If you've ever wondered whether love belongs in business, this is your invitation to lead with it, backed by data. Let's make love measurable, and let's make it better. Fiona, to begin, we would love to ask you, what is your response to the concept of love at work?
That's a great question. For me, who is a total data geek when it comes to anything to do with the workplace, love at work for me means showing up and demonstrating care for your employees. It means demonstrating respect, listening, establishing trust, creating safe spaces for employees to raise their concerns and issues. And really, as you just said, it's about making sure employees are seen and heard. And so, you know, I think if a company really cares for their employees, it does all of these things.
I have a quick question for you on the same vein, if you will. When we talk about love dash at work, we intended a little bit as a provocation, as a little poking of, you know, people who maybe don't feel like emotions belong at work. How do you see this provocation resonate in some of the work that maybe you've undertaken under this broad topic?
You know, I see people who are passionate about the work that they do every day, like whether it is making ice cream or putting together a helicopter or, you know, serving a customer. Like if they're not emotional about it, if they don't have passion about it, then they're probably in the wrong seat. They're probably on the wrong bus, right? And I think that I see it every day. I see it in my team. I see it in teams of others where people get excited and emotional and they care and they even the extremes of getting angry, right? When things aren't going well. I mean, right. In my mind, that's all of the parts.
It's not
of the
always
emotion,
all love, right?
Exactly. Like
love also has a little bit of sometimes disagreement.
Exactly. And I think if you can have that and have good communications that allow you to share like, hey, this isn't working for me, or, you know, this could be better if we did that. You know, I think that's how I see it. I see it every single day from a frontline employee to a senior executive who gets passionate about what they're trying to do. So I think for people that think it doesn't exist, I think it does. And it shows up every day in just in different ways.
Yeah, in my experience, I feel like we just have not named it something as powerful as the word love, as, you know, all of the intonations that it brings, the good and the bad. And the provocation is like, what if we valued deep affection as much as we value deep pockets? Mm-hmm. What if we explored that? So does that like ring any bell for you in terms of some of the work that you've done?
You know, so we collect millions of surveys every year. We conduct all employee surveys, and they tend to ask employees about how they feel about the company, how they feel about leadership, how they feel about their team, their day-to-day experiences. And not only do we ask them rating questions like agree, disagree, most of the time, every single one of our surveys has at least 2 to 3 open-ended spaces, right, where they can put in what they think. And that's where I think the real passion shows up. That's where people are saying, hey, you know, I've said this and I'm happy with that, but, you know, we really need to fix this environment. Or, and it shows up in the smallest of places. It's, you know, when they complain about the bathrooms are dirty, what that's actually saying is you don't care about me. You don't care about me to at least provide a clean environment. Or I don't feel safe here. We're using broken equipment. Right. That means that you don't respect me enough to provide me with equipment that puts my own life at risk. So I think in every single time we do a survey, we identify these kinds of challenges that are the voices of the employees speaking up, right? And it's our job to amplify those voices and identify those and bring those to light in such a way that I can then go to the senior leadership and say, hey, you got some priorities here. And if you don't address them, these employers are not going to love you anymore. They're going to walk out the door. Right. And so that's a problem. And that them walking out the door costs you real dollars. Right. And let me tell you how many dollars that costs you. And let me connect that to the bottom line so that we are making the connection between how you demonstrate care for your employee and what's it costing your bottom line. Right. And I think that's the connection we're able to make through metrics that we do it every day for our clients.
What's the tipping point that makes executives go, aha, I get it. I see it. I see how so-and-so's comments about the bathroom or the toolkit or the lack of access of this thing or the return to office or How does that thread show up at the senior leadership level? When do they have this aha moment?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting, and it ranges by the culture of the leadership team and the company. But in those that are putting people first, right, the first instinct is for them to say, I wonder who said that.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? And, yeah, and time. I usually say, no, we're not going there. That comment that I've read out to you is an example of about 350 other comments of similar vein. It doesn't matter who said it. What matters is how many people have made comments like this and how it's influencing how they view this company and the way in which they talk about this organization outside of the door. And then I think that's where our skills as data storytellers comes in, and I have to give them examples. You know, is that a bathroom that you would want to bring your daughter to? Or your wife, if they were here in the facility, right? Or let me give you an example of an employee who doesn't want to come back to the office because they have an hour commute and they also have to drop their kids off. And, you know, they feel as if they could be more productive during that time. And in fact, you know, this is how much more productive time they could have. So it's about data storytelling. I will tell you that most executives that I speak to are, if they've done the survey, they're usually ready to listen, right? And they know that they've got challenges. And so they're usually ready to understand the root causes. So that's where we leverage the data, kind of tell those stories. I think the biggest challenge that I see is getting them to focus in on taking action afterwards, because it can be very overwhelming. If you've got 50,000 employees, that's 50,000 voices you have to listen to. So it's our job to say, all right, of the 50,000 voices, these are the loudest challenges. These are the ones that are going to have the biggest impact on the business. Let's just start work on this one priority. And I think it's channeling them to real action that is the key to successful employee listening, right? Because then they can actually make real change. If you give them too much, and I've seen this happen, I've seen many organizations get a data dump, right, from whichever company, right? It doesn't matter who it is. And they're like, oh, wow, okay, now what? And that's the problem, right? When they get stuck at that now what versus where we say, okay, you've got a lot over here. Let's talk about your top three priorities and the ones that are going to have the biggest bang for your buck. Those are the ones we need to focus in on. So it's about channeling them and helping them to prioritize.
Fiona, how do you then parse that information into actionable bite-sized pieces for an organization of 50,000 people and help measure the movement of the needle?
That's a great question. So there's a couple of ways we do. One is through communications, right? So you want to make sure that every leader who has participated in the survey with their teams gets a very simplified report of like what the data said and what their priorities are, right? It's closing that feedback loop first is really important. The second is making sure there's action plans at multiple levels within the organization. There's those things at the executive level that only the executives can deal with. Pay, benefits, policy change, you know, that kind of thing. That should be where they focus in. And then those things that frontline managers can handle, like improving the quality of their stand-up meetings at the beginning of their shift, or making sure that schedules are posted a week before as opposed to the day before, right? So it's parsing out where different actions can happen at which level. And then in terms of how do they track progress, we typically recommend that an organization identifies two or three KPIs that they're tracking at the same time they're taking this action. So things like early turnover, right? Turnover within the first 90 days. Things like absenteeism. So we can see how many people are calling out. Mm-hmm. And then things like OSHA and accident rates, because often we see a strong link between behaviors and accident rates. And then in retail, we often recommend something like shrink, which is an operational metric that is very, you know, in the weeds with how much money it costs. But we've seen time and time again that employee engagement has a very strong relationship with turnover, with both turnover and shrink. And so if they are tracking those at the same time, they're able to map out the impact of their kind of employee listening responses.
We know, I think intrinsically nowadays, that good behavior, feeling good at work, you know, just doing the right thing and being on purpose. Like, I feel like if we don't have those basic things in line, we kind of know, okay, well, there's going to be a cost to this, whether it's mm-hmm. turnover. Mm-hmm. What about the flip side? What if we focused, or do you have any examples of this, of a place where a team has focused on the upside? What is the growth that we can create in our organization when we focus on making people feel a certain way, when we focus on bringing love to work? What is the upside of love at work, I guess is the question. Have you done that?
I mean, yes and no. In terms of, you know, what is the upside? I mean, there's certain metrics that we include in our surveys, like employee engagement, like care, like psychological safety, and things that we know that if these right things are happening, they're going to increase. And we know that those metrics have an impact on the bottom line. We also have done a number of predictive turnover studies where we have looked at data over time. So we did one not long ago with a healthcare organization who was having significant turnover among their nurses, and they just couldn't keep talent. And so what we did is we did an analysis of the last 3 years of their data, pulling in their HRIS data and their engagement data. And some of their leadership effectiveness and performance ratings. And we were able to predict basically who are the next 100 people most likely to leave. And so, but they hadn't left yet, right? We know that people who had answered a certain question on the survey negatively were 4 or 5 times more likely to leave in the next 6 months. And we've done this in healthcare settings, in manufacturing, we've done it in the airlines. And so what we know is, okay, if we can determine based on their prior experience who's most likely to leave, then we can say, all right, here's some positive things you could do to reduce that risk. So go and do stay interviews, mm-hmm. make sure anniversary celebrations are happening, making sure frontline managers are having one-on-one conversations and check-ins, making sure a career conversation is happening within the next 90 days, right? So there's certain practices that you can put in place that will really help retain that talent. And ultimately, you'll see the benefits of not having to go and hire more people, right? And the cost that is, and the cost of retraining and onboarding, et cetera.
We're just finding people these days. It's like everybody's looking for a job, but they're impossible to find.
Yeah. Yep. And that's one of the challenges. I was talking to someone recently and I said, you know what, I hear you saying you have lots of recruitment challenges, but from your engagement survey, I see that you have lots of concerns about career growth. Why are you not using your own organization as a recruiting ground? Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes people don't see the value of what they already have because they're outwardly focused or forward focused. When I'm a huge believer of saying, let's take a look at what we've already got and see if we can upskill or promote or recognize or give someone a stretch assignment.
And people are looking for ways to connect more deeply with the meaning of their work. So it feels like we're at a great time in the history of workplace to shift the focus, your point, to how do we grow what we have? How do we make this even better?
And I think often we forget the power of the frontline manager. Like most frontline managers will say, I know my team, I know who has the potential and I know who's probably where they're at and where they should be. And if handled correctly, I think if we just pause sometimes and said to a manager, hey, tell me about your team. Talk to me about who you think has that next level in them. And let's have a conversation about what those next steps might be. And I think that can make all the difference because, you know, recruitment as well has often shifted to a centralized practice that is somewhat divorced from that front line. And they may not have the knowledge or the skills database that they need in order to recognize who they have. I mean, if you asked an organization today, can you tell me all the skills that your employees have? Most of them would say, no. They probably have not done a skills inventory in decades. And I think that's a missed opportunity, especially in a tight talent market, to not leverage. And I see it all the time in surveys when we ask the question, do you feel like you're fully utilized in the role that you're in? A lot of people will say no. They have me doing PowerPoints and I could be writing stories, right? Whatever the example is. They have me at a cash register when I could be redesigning that front end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think we see it all the time.
We've seen it in the reverse too, where the conversations with employees on a performance standpoint happen, but not the development side. A manager or supervisor makes an assumption that someone wants to be promoted because that's the natural progression of events. And I had a situation a number of years ago where an individual just like this was promoted into a manager's role and flamed out. And, you know, 6 months into this new supervisory position, the vice president came to me and said, we've got to let her go. She's terrible. And I said, well, wait a minute. She was your rock star 6 months ago when we promoted her. What happened? And A, they had never asked whether she wanted to be in a supervisory or management role. First of all, they just gave it to her. And she assumed she had to take it in order to remain employed. And then afterwards, when they came to her and said, well, you know, now we're struggling with your performance. No one had sat with her and asked her why her performance was failing. And in this particular circumstance, it turned out that the great love of her life was raising and training show dogs. She did this work because she liked the work, but it afforded her the ability to do the things she loved. And we took all of that away from her. Just ask the question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's institutional in many companies where the process of promotion is you promote someone who's really good at their job into a people leader without giving them the skills or the training to be a great people leader. And I think we see people fail, and most often, and I'm sure you've heard it time and time again, but we do exit interviews, thousands a month. And so we hear why people leave. And it's more often the supervisor or the manager they have than the company they're working for. It's they didn't treat me right. They didn't believe in me. They didn't support me. Whatever it is, they didn't treat me with respect. People leave people.
Right.
People leave people. That's for sure. Yeah. Which to me puts in perspective the 50,000 employee example. It to me, it makes it approachable and achievable. When you think about, hey, we're not focusing enough on our frontline leaders, or on our first levels, on our mid-careers, on that, we know. Are you seeing an investment in that level of management where that connection between humans, boss, employee, leader, where that is probably the most valuable in an organization? Are you seeing a lot of work at that level?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean,
so I work with a food manufacturing organization, and they have a lot of frontline employees. They have a strong frontline supervisors. But none of those supervisors until a few years ago had really been trained on what it takes to manage people. And so they have gone through and invested greatly in a rigorous frontline manager training that teaches them, like, how do you listen? How do you provide feedback? How do you have difficult conversations? How do you clearly explain job expectations? And all of those things that they may have not have known how responsible they were for them. Similarly, now they're actually working on those supervisors who do a very pretty good job of managing people. They're not great communicators. Like, so when big communications come down from afar, you know, up above, the supervisors go, that's great. That's, I'm really glad I know that. And then it doesn't necessarily translate down to the front lines. And so now they're considering training that's looking at, when you get a message like this, here's the key notes that you need to turn around and communicate to your frontline workers, because they need to hear this too. And here's the way to do it. And it shouldn't be the, oh, they said this and it's them making this decision, right? Which is very much them and us, but it should be a, hey, as an organization, we are doing this and this is how it's going to impact us and you, and this is how we're going to move forward. Like, it's that, how do you make sure the managers are communicating on behalf of the company and listening to the employees? They play such a critical role with managing that relationship, that direct relationship that they have with the company is between that frontline employee and leadership, is that frontline supervisor. And I think if you're not taking care and giving those frontline supervisors the almost like the relationship skills and the emotional intelligence to handle an employee who's upset or dealing with personal issues or whatever it might be, it's a missed opportunity.
It is.
Fiona, I'm interested in understanding from your experience where in a circumstance like this particular example, you see and can demonstrate for perhaps a reluctant client, I mean, any client, sure, but a reluctant client, why the investment makes sense. What truly is being the most impactful for them? Because we don't want them to take a single case and just move on from it. We want this to become repetitive practice for them. Mm. What do you do and what do you see?
So again, I go back to the data. Every time I go back to the data, and in most circumstances, I'll give you an example with this organization. We have an all-employee survey. Within that survey, we have a supervisory effectiveness index where they get to rate their supervisors on all the behaviors. And then we're able to see, okay, for these departments over here, your bottom 10% of departments where leadership effectiveness is rated really low, look at the turnover they're having, look at their level of engagement, look at their accident rates. Now let's take a look at the other end of the spectrum, the top 15 or 20%. Look how effective they're rating their supervisors and look at how high their engagement is, how high the customer sat is, how high, you know, and there's usually anywhere from a 15 to a 30 point difference between the top of the scale and the bottom of the scale.
Wow.
So being able to say to them, you know, and then they'll say, well, what's the benchmark? I'm like, I don't care what the benchmark is. This top 20% in your own organization, in your culture, under your strategy and guidance, is able to accomplish an 80 percentile of engagement. In the same organization, you've got leaders over here not doing so well that are generating a 30% engagement. Tell me why you can't get that 30 up to 80 like the rest of them.
That is your benchmark. Your internal benchmark. I love this insight. It's another illustration of a point we made earlier. When inside of their organization, they have the exact use case that they could start experimenting and playing with.
And with the same pay structure, with the same benefit structure.
No change whatsoever.
Nothing else is different. Sometimes the nature of work is a little different, but for the most part, there's usually examples, even within the same type of work, where we can point to that here you're doing it really well and here you're not. The only difference between these groups is the people managing them. Now let's talk about what their tenure is. Have they been through training? Where did they come from? Were they internal or external hire? Do they understand the culture? Or did they come from a completely different industry and it's not quite how it works here? It's not a witch hunt. It's about, how do we give them the same skills that these really effective folks have? And can we mentor them? Can we, like, how do we build connections so that our best supervisors are mentoring our weaker ones? Like, whatever it might be, given the culture and their budget, there's a solution. And I just think a lot of companies tend to go outside, look for something expensive when they can look at their own stuff and go, we can get better at doing this. Mm-hmm. But they've never used the data to capture their own story before.
Yeah, they have not. And, you know, I think I come from a digital marketing prioritization of, you know, executives, and, you know, marketers want to go get data everywhere, right? Like, oh, let's buy this data and let's put this in our toolkit and let's like, and then they have this data and there's a feeling of, I guess, safety maybe that comes with it. Okay, we have all the things we need. And then quite often, 95% of them make decisions based on their intuition, their feeling, what they think is right, their experience. So what if we, instead of spending as marketers or as other, you know, data point seekers, what if we reshifted that investment into our own house to see what insights can we really derive from our own behavior?
Well, exactly. And one of the things actually taken from is used very commonly in marketing and customer studies that we use on the employee side is segmentation. Like in the same way you would segment your audience or your customers in terms of their attitudes and behaviors, we do exactly the same thing with employees. And we look at who are our cheerleaders, who are our casual fans, who are the people that are going to speak out positively for the company, and then who are our negative Nellies, right? And are tuned out, who are most likely to leave or worse, quit on the job. And once you take those 50,000 employees and aggregate them into groups who think alike, your strategies can become targeted, but not in such a way that you're targeting individuals, but going towards groups and say, hey, we have a huge bunch of cheerleaders over here. We know what they're passionate about. We know what they're really good at. Let's do some best practice learning from them, right? And then we've got this group who's really negative or tuned out. Let's see what the root causes are, and let's communicate and try and fix some of the challenges that they're facing so that they become cheerleaders. And I think if you approach employee listening and employee care through that lens, you can get much more targeted versus what often I see happening is, oh, we got a 52 or an engagement score and it's higher than the Gallup average. We're doing great. Okay, so a 52 means just over half. That means 48% are disengaged. Just because you're better than the benchmark doesn't mean you should stop trying to get better. And I, you know, I think that's why sometimes surveys get a bad rap.
Yeah. And I feel like the benchmark's a little low too, right? Like we're sort of setting our standard to, oh, the least dissatisfied. I would rather set a benchmark to the most powerful and the richest place that we can go as our benchmark so that we can reap in the benefits of, you know, yes, of course, we're going to have some things that don't work out, but overall, it's a much more positive direction.
And if you can do that within your own culture, right, and look at what are your internal benchmarks, you know, if we've got 1,000 stores, what are our top 100 best stores and why?
Right.
If we've got 500 facilities, if we've got 10 facilities, who's our best and who's our worst and why? Right. I think that's a good starting place, at least.
Over the weekend, I was sort of noodling just on the word love and its application in this conversation. And one of the things that kind of kept ringing in the back of my head was the idea of commoditizing the idea of love in the workplace, right? We've talked about caring, we've talked about employee engagement, and, you know, is this just another buzzword? And to the point, Fiona, that you were just making around capturing employee engagement data, but then not actually listening or digging deep enough to do something where we as leaders in these organizations walk our talk, really understand what the impact and the implications are. And Caroline, to your point, looking at the benchmark that is our benchmark, the thing that's most important for us, we don't know enough about the cultures of many of these other organizations to be able to use effectively those benchmarks. Right. And I want us to be good stewards of the idea that love in a work environment really matters, but your environment's love language is going to be different than somebody else's.
Exactly.
It has to be ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very personal thing. And I think I work with organizations all over the spectrum of, you know, dysfunctional and not. But those that get it right are the ones that are transparent. They're good communicators. They embrace the cultural pillars and they demonstrate them every day. And they hold people accountable. The strongest cultures are where people really believe in them, and then they hold each other accountable. It's not about someone coming in and saying, it's not the way we do it around here. It's about, hey, there's a better way of doing that, right? And when a culture is strong, employees set that tone, right? And it resonates up and down the hierarchy, back and forth. And I think those are the ones that I've got a lot of clients I work with like that. And I'm like, I think their cultures are fantastic. And then I have worked with others where it is just a poster on the wall, and it's someone put it there because they thought it sounded good. But if you were to ask someone on the front lines, they'd say, oh, I don't know. You mean the poster over there? I can't see it from over here. I don't have my glasses on. Right. That's when culture is not resonating. It's not part of who they are and how they operate. And I think good cultures are intentional in their design, that is a reflection of the employees that work there.
Have you all read the May, June Harvard Business Review magazine? I bring it up because in the last version, there was a lot of content about sort of these employee specific strategy building that managers, leaders can start to put into place. Because most people, I mean, we go to work to find our purpose, and most of us are dissatisfied. We're unhappy. We don't like it. I love hearing, Fiona, that you are working with cultures that you love. This is huge. This is a sign to me, right? Like, you have leaders who are by design interested in delivering this experience because they hire you to be part of their team.
Yeah.
What do you say to someone who understands, maybe one of our listeners understand, like, we understand this intrinsically, I want to feel good at work. What do you say to a listener who maybe is not in that type of leadership environment, right? They go to work, they sense something's off, they want to express their voice because they care. What is your advice to them? They don't have a survey, let's say, like, they could be entry, middle level, they sense that they need to say something to someone. What's your advice to them?
That's a great question. I would like to think that most organizations have a listening infrastructure in some way, whether they're grassroots meetings, skip level meetings. I think the first thing I would say to them is talk to your supervisor. Have an open dialogue with someone and say, hey, you know, I see these challenges I'm facing. How do I raise these up? How do I bubble these concerns up? A good supervisor will say, you know what, I've seen them too. You know, let's get a plan together. If there are no channels, I have to say, I'm a proponent of the employee willing to shoot the CEO a note, right? And raise it to the highest level. I've seen that. Some organizations that are great at things like that is like Wegmans. They have like an Ask Bob channel. You can literally submit a question to Bob, I think he's the COO, who will read all of those comments and have people on his team reply. And that's going direct to the top to raise your concern. I think that's probably the best way to do it, is up through the hierarchy. And then to leaders who aren't necessarily into employee listening, I would never say to them, you need to start listening to your employees. I would pose the question through the business language and say, would you like to enhance your profitability or your productivity or your revenue? Do you think you can get better revenue out of your business? And if they say, I'd love to, I wouldn't. I'd be like, I know how to do it. Let's start by talking to your employees. They are your best, most sustainable resource. You pay the most for them more than anything else, probably.
Yeah.
And they are your richest resource. Let's go gold mining, right? Let's go find out from your people. And I've never had someone say no, right? Because they're like, wait, I can do this without, and it's not a lot of money to go digging in your own mind that already exists with all these people, right? You're leveraging your own best resource,
right?
Versus going and investing in something else. You're investing in yourself by listening to your own employees. It's common sense to me.
And what's so interesting about that, we always recommend the same thing, particularly in the context of the work that we do. And invariably, we find some golden egg that you can just act on in that moment. You know, there's some small piece of something that increases efficiency or productivity or whatever the case may be. When done internally, the other thing it does is increase the level of trust, commitment, understanding, open communication. So you don't have to just skip all of the levels in the organization to communicate. Mm-hmm. You've opened this entire network to having a more truthful conversation, which in and of itself increases levels of employee engagement.
Yeah. And once the first person gets recognized for the innovative idea, everybody else is like, well, I know that if this door opened left to right instead of right to left, we'd stop bumping into each other every day. Right. And that's where the surprise ideas come out. And you're like, well, why didn't anybody move the door hinge before?
So easy. Let's
yeah, that's where you discover the real stuff. Right.
Right. Yeah. Fiona, this has been an amazing conversation. If you could leave our listeners with one piece of advice to ensure they were leading or experiencing organizations with love at the forefront, what would you recommend?
I think employee listening is a thing. I think listen to your people is the number one thing. And I think empathy is huge. One of the questions you had asked me before was, you know, when have I personally experienced kind of love in the workplace or care? And I had an experience recently and I was like, wow, it really had an impact on me. So we had gone through this. We've just gone through a merger. We are now part of a much larger organization, which comes with all that change management and transformation and lots of requests coming at you from all different dimensions. And one of the other senior leaders set up a call with me. And the very first thing she said to me was, Fiona, how are you doing? And I said, oh, we got a lot going on. We're doing this and we're doing that. And she went, no, how are you doing? And I went, oh, it kind of took me aback, right? And then she basically said, I have been through this too, and I know that you are protecting your employees, you're taking care of everyone else, you're, you know, responding to leadership demands. And it was the first time somebody had stopped me and said, how are you doing? And I think if we lead with that in the way, and it had such an impact with me, and I train supervisors to say, there's three questions you should ask people. One is, how are you doing today? How are you feeling? The second is, what are you working on? And the third is, how can I support you? In that order, the power of three questions. And I had never had them used on me before, right? I was always something I trained other people. And here was a leader who started with, how are you doing about me personally? And I tell you, I nearly cried because I think I had so much stress and tension built up. And so I was like, taken aback by it. And why it struck me was because someone cared about me to ask how I was doing in midst this perfect storm of change, and then said, what are you working on and how can I support you? It just had a wonderful impact on me. And so something I had trained other supervisors to do when done to me in a senior leadership position was quite jarring. But I would say that to any leader out there. Before you jump into the conversation about what are you doing, what are you working on, how can you help me, it's how are you doing? And it's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. So that's the advice. Start with the person.
I love it. That's so beautiful. Fiona, would you just leave our audience with some information about how to reach out to you and what they should reach out to you for?
Sure. If they can reach out to me at any time, either through LinkedIn, my profile is out there, Fiona Jameson at People Results. My email is fjameson@peopleresults.com. And any type of employee listening, whether it's surveys or focus groups or interviews, or if you want to connect the data between your people and your business, I've got a team that can help you do it and tell meaningful stories about, you know, how you're producing and being a great employer. So I'm happy to be a resource for people. Even if they just want to talk about what it means to really listen to employees, I'm happy to be a resource for folks.
We thank you for all the work you're doing on behalf of folks and organizations we rely on all the time. It makes my heart sing to know that there's somebody out there shepherding and stewarding the employee experience in really positive and impactful ways.
Yeah.
For all of those of you who are listening to us, we thank you for tuning in. If any part of this message has resonated with you, we ask you to please like, share, subscribe, and continue to lead with love at work.